This is Tom Shrewsbury with Reflections for the Covenant Network. One of my favorite writers is Bert Gazy, who has published a remarkable number of books that I would personally categorize as inspiring and fascinating. And I'm not really alone in admiring his works. In describing his book, Mystics and Marvels, Archbishop Chaput of Denver says he writes with real spiritual substance that feeds the soul. And Mike Aquilina, editor of the New Covenant, says Gazy shows us how God breaks suddenly and powerfully into the lives of ordinary people and changes them forever. And even Father Benedict Rochelle, who is certainly not one to exaggerate, says of Gazy, "I can bear witness to the authenticity of Gazy's book, having known one of the wonder-working mystics and friends of God he writes about." That's the Venerable Solanus Casey, of whom he's speaking. Pretty good credentials, I would say. And in our age, the era in which we all share, I'm afraid that many of us are so busy that God often takes a back seat to our innermost thoughts, except maybe when we're in trouble or desperately in need of help. So many times we may feel neglected, unlucky, with problems perhaps too numerous to mention. Well, I guess we all have problems. That's part of life. And too often we probably just grumble about those problems to ourselves, maybe our spouses. But when we're really in a tough spot, that's usually when we turn to God, when we need or want something badly, very badly. Just like when we were little and needed something, there was Mom and Dad. But in our world of today, this very day, in our everyday thoughts, how often did we think about God? Or did we think about Him at all? Maybe, just maybe, that's why He uses some of His very special friends to get our attention with gifts that are truly out of this world. We find them constantly, and not just in the lives of the saints, but certainly they have their share. We find them, too, in people to whom God has given very special blessings to help us to keep Him in our thoughts. And perhaps if we do, well, maybe we'd all be living in a better world, a world that listens to God and hears Him. Well, today I'd like to share some of Bert Gazy's stories, as well as some of my personal favorites, that simply shows the awesome power of God. But first, let me tell you one of my personal favorites about St. Pio Pietrocina, better known to us as simply Padre Pio. It seems there was an American named Bill Martin who went to San Giovanni Rotondo many years ago, where Padre Pio lived at Our Lady of the Angels Monastery, and where he received the stigmata, the wounds of Christ on his hands and feet and side, which he bore for 50 years. Well, Bill Martin became a friend of Padre Pio's, and later became a religious brother, and after Padre Pio's death, he became a priest, Father Giuseppe Pio, whom I met on one of my visits to San Giovanni Rotondo, but I'm getting ahead of my story. It seems one day Bill Martin and Padre Pio were sitting in the courtyard at the monastery, and young Bill Martin was deep in thought about his calling, his desire to go to San Giovanni Rotondo and meet this Padre Pio. The deep-seated urging that, well, that called him to go there. And in his mind, in Bill's mind, he was silently considering a question. And that was, who called me here, to this place in Italy, high on a mountain on the spur of the Butte of Italy? Was it Padre Pio, or maybe Our Lady? Well, he didn't say anything. This was just a thought in the silence of his mind. Well, after finishing his prayers, young Bill got up to leave the courtyard, and Padre Pio, undoubtedly praying his rosary, looked up from across the way and called after him, "Bill, It was Our Lady. And speaking of Padre Pio, Gezi retells what, to me, is another of my favorite stories about Padre Pio. It seems back in 1905, when a young man named Francisco Forgione was in the seminary, before he became Father Pio, or Padre Pio. He was praying in the chapel when he experienced one of his many charisms, the gift of bilocation, being in two places at the same time. He was transported from the chapel to a luxurious villa quite a distance away, where he assisted a man on his deathbed. Now, about the same time, the man's wife gave birth to a baby girl, which was witnessed by young Fra Pio, or Brother Pio at that time. Almost immediately, the Blessed Mother appeared to him and entrusted the young girl to Padre Pio with the admonition that she was like a diamond in the rough, and it was his responsibility to make her shine, and that he would see her again in St. Peter's Basilica. After all of this had taken place, young Brother Pio wrote a detailed account of the entire experience, which he dated and gave to his spiritual advisor, and this account is a part of the archives of Padre Pio. Some 17 years later, the little girl, who was named Giovanna, was experiencing doubts and concerns about her faith, and went to St. Peter's to go to confession and to seek help about her doubts. She was told that the hour was late and there was no priest available to hear her confession. But a Capuchin priest came and agreed to hear her confession and was able to answer all of her questions to her satisfaction. She wanted to thank him in person, but he left as silently as he came. She didn't see him leave the confessional. He was just gone. Well, the following year, Giovanna and a friend visited San Giovanni Rotondo, where she wanted to meet this Padre Pio, whom she had heard so much about. When she met him, he told her that they had already met, and she said no, they hadn't, she would remember. And he asked her if she remembered going to confession in St. Peter's, to which she immediately replied that she had. Well, he said, "I am that priest." And then he told her, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. She became a spiritual daughter of Padre Pio, and when she became a member of the Third Order of St. Francis, it was customary to take another name. Padre Pio told her to take the name Jacoba, to which she replied, "I don't like it. It's an ugly name." But he insisted, saying, "You will be called Sister Jacoba, because, like Jacoba, the noble friend of St. Francis, who was present when Francis died, you will be present when I die." In the early mornings of September 23, 1968, Giovanna had a vision in which she was transported to Padre Pio's cell, where she witnessed his death. She later described the events that evening and early hours of the morning, as well as a detailed description of his cell, which obviously she had never seen, and her description was completely accurate. And there are so many wonderful stories about other saints, like Saint Anthony of Padua, that we could do a continuing series about his life alone, his life, his times, and his accomplishments. I'm sure that most of us have heard, or perhaps said, when something was lost or misplaced, "Well, say a prayer to Saint Anthony that you will find it." Have you ever wondered how that all came about? Well, Bert Gezi gives us an insight as to the origination as his being a saint of lost items or causes. It seems that there was a young man who was a novice in the Franciscan order and lived in the same building as Anthony. For some reason, perhaps the strictness and austerity of the order, or the prospect of a life other than luxury and comfort, whatever the cause, the young novice decided that perhaps this was not the life he would want to follow. So he decided to run away and give up his vocation, and as he was doing so, As he left, he took one of Anthony's manuscripts with him. In short, he stole it. It was a glossary of the Psalms, and the money he would receive for selling this valuable manuscript would provide him with the funds to complete his escape. When Anthony discovered that the manuscript had been stolen by the young man, he immediately prayed for its return, as well as the young man's. It was not long before the young man returned to the monastery and presented the manuscript back to Anthony, asking for his forgiveness. He told Anthony that as he was approaching a bridge, a terrifying image made crossing the bridge impossible and threatened him if he did not return the manuscript. Well, Anthony forgave him and, oh yes, the young man remained in the monastery. I think it's good for us all to consider from time to time these holy people whom God has favored with very special blessings. God has a reason for everything he does, and we humans often have a tendency to forget, to put God back in the center of our lives instead of in the background. I firmly believe that he sends us these mystics for whom he has given very special charisms to tell us, don't forget me. And one of these mystics for whom I have a great respect is the Venerable Solanus Casey, a Capuchin priest who died in 1957 and who was known as the Porter of St. Bonaventure's in Detroit, whose cause for canonization is well underway. Incidentally, he was, as I mentioned, a good friend of Father Benedict Rochel. When I was in Detroit a few years ago doing a talk on the life of Padre Pio at several parishes there, I was taken to St. Bonaventure's, where I heard firsthand the stories of Solanus Casey and the humble life he led with heroic virtue, and I've never forgotten him. People sought his intercession before God with their troubles, their hopes, and their dreams, and received so many cures, successes, and favorable answers to their prayers that his superiors required him to keep a notebook of the requests and answers. One particular story that Gazy tells in his Miracles and Marvels is that of an 8-month-old child suffering from mastoiditis. Now, to put the story in its proper perspective, this was an era before our sophisticated drugs and antibiotics, and during that period, about the only way to treat the condition was to surgically drill a hole behind each ear to allow for the condition to drain. Well, as you can imagine, that was pretty difficult and dangerous. At that time, a very, very dangerous procedure, and the child's mother was overcome with the fear of this surgery. She wanted God's help and decided to do something herself. So she arranged for a car to be waiting, and while the hospital personnel were busy in another area of the hospital, she grabbed the child, burning with fever, and was somehow able to make her way to the waiting car with the baby in her arms and left the hospital. It was at this point that she suddenly remembered hearing about this holy man at St. Bonaventure's who had helped heal people and had the driver head for the monastery. Arriving at St. Bonaventure's, she immediately found the good priest, the porter, at his desk just inside the front door. She explained all that had happened and about the doctors performing the dangerous surgery and was afraid to see this take place. And Father Solanus asked the child's name and he told the distraught mother to trust God and then he prayed over the infant. Following his prayers, he told the mother, he'll be all right by morning and don't worry, he won't need the operation. When the child was at home, as she placed him in his crib near her bed, she touched his cheeks again, and they were burning hot with fever. But exhausted, she fell asleep, and when she awoke early the next day, she reached for his cheeks, and they were cold. Her first reaction was that the child was dead, but he opened his eyes and looked at her. Both she and her husband breathed a sigh of relief, as you can imagine, and gathering up the baby, headed straight for St. Bonaventure's and Father Solanas. He was not at all surprised and reminded them to thank God. They took the baby to the hospital, who told them the baby was cured and did not need the operation, and Solanas Casey entered another name in his notebook. There are a number of books written about Solanas Casey that I would suggest you may want to read to help us on our faith journey. His life is certainly fascinating and inspirational, with a lesson for us all in simple humility. Now, since we're talking about vignettes that are examples of God's marvels, I'd like to digress and tell you my own very favorite story, which incidentally I believe is also one of Bishop Sheen's favorites, and certainly bears retelling now. Around the turn of the 20th century in France, there was a brilliant young woman named Elizabeth Arrighi, who met and fell in love with an equally brilliant doctor named Felix Le Sueur, who shared the same romantic adoration with her. They seemed to have been made for each other, except that she was a devout Catholic and he was a confirmed atheist. She was fluent in many languages, and in addition to being a prominent doctor, he also was a writer and publisher of atheistic periodicals. But despite their religious differences, as I said, they fell madly in love, and while these differences bothered Elizabeth, Dr. Le Sueur promised that he would not interfere with the practice of her faith, and so they were married. But, as one would expect, over time, he would often give Elizabeth articles to read that he had written promoting atheism, which she would dutifully read, along with her favorite author, one St. Thomas Aquinas. After a few years, Elizabeth became painfully ill, and this condition lasted for 9 years. As she was dying and Felix was at her side, she confided to him with the words, "After I am dead, you will become a Dominican priest." To which he replied, "Elizabeth, you know my hatred of religion. I have lived with it, and I shall die with it." And she repeated her prophecy and then passed from this life to the next. After her death, he found her last will and testament, which included a very special message to him, and I quote, "I will to you the most precious gift a woman can give to her husband. I will you 9 years of suffering. I ask God to send me sufficient pain and suffering to purchase your soul. And on the day I die, your soul will be bought and paid for." Unquote. Well, not too long after World War I broke out and Felix Le Sueur was in the army and his assignments required him to travel through much of France, often in the southwest, and there he subliminally had the feeling that Elizabeth was telling him to go to Lourdes. And this happened over and over again. In a way, this amused him because he had written so frequently about what he called the fraud of Lourdes. But on one of his travels, he found himself near the famous shrine and then thought perhaps that if he went there this time, perhaps the frequent requests from Elizabeth would stop. So to blot out these thoughts, he did go to that Lourdes that he hated so much, and filled with disgust, he marched right up to the statue of the Virgin in the grotto, ready to sneer, when suddenly, to his utter dismay, he heard himself saying, "There is a God." Later, years later, in 1924, Bishop Sheen told of attending a retreat in Cannes, France, where 4 times a day his retreat was led by Father Felix Le Sueur, Dominican. Again, with apologies to Borghese from straying from the stories in his Mystics and Marvels, I only mention them because the stories of God's graces and gifts are all around us if we can only look for them. Gezi describes what he terms as royal miracles because they concern St. Elizabeth of Hungary, whose life only lasted about 24 years on this earth, as a wife, mother, activist, miracle worker, and mystic, which in itself is a pretty fascinating resume. When very young, Elizabeth married Ludwig, a young man of 21, who succeeded his father as Count of Thuringia. Elizabeth would have her maids awaken her at night so she could get up and pray. And she was often criticized by others in the court for not only her generosity to the poor, but her willingness to go to almost any length to help those less fortunate, no matter how distasteful her actions might seem. To Elizabeth, she was only doing what she felt God was calling all of us to do, to love our neighbor. To his credit, and because of the love Ludwig had for his delightful wife, he supported her charitable activities. As an illustration as to the above and beyond calls of duty she exercised, she once went so far as to put a leper in the very bed she shared with her husband. This time, even for Ludwig, he was furious. He flew into a rage and rushed into the bedroom and pulled back the covers, and instead of the body of a leper, Ludwig had a vision of the crucified Christ, and he never again would complain of her charities. Elizabeth had a hospital built that would be available to the poor, which she visited twice daily, where she could personally minister to the sick. Gezi writes that she would see that 900 poor people would be fed at the castle every day, and to assuage their pride, she would let them work to earn their rewards. And she once found a deformed boy that was both deaf and dumb lying at the front of the hospital. She was not aware of his physical limitations and asked him who had brought him there. Well, naturally, there was no answer to that and other questions about his health and his background. She said to the boy, "In the name of the Lord, I command you to tell me where you came from." At that command, the child stood up completely, restored to health, and spoke, explaining how his mother had brought him to the hospital and that he had been deaf and dumb since birth. She told him not to tell anyone what had happened, but naturally he told because the cure was so obvious. Another time she was in church and saw a blind man touching a statue of the Virgin Mary's face with love and devotion. He explains that he had come to pray and to find the lady who helps the poor. He said he was going around to feel how big and wide the church was, and she asked, "Would you like to see it?" He answered, "God willing, but I was born blind." Elizabeth said, "Pray that God will give you light, and I will pray for you." She knelt and prayed, and his sight was restored. On November 17, 1231, in declining health, she told her attendant, "It is now the time of the day when the Lord rose from the dead and broke the doors of hell, and he will release me." And she died at the age of 24. Then there is the saint to whom we may not be as familiar, and certainly Bert Gezi gives us a remarkable insight into this holy man, Saint Vincent Ferrer, miracle worker. It seems he performed his first miracle before he was born. That's right, before he was born. There was this blind woman who pressed her head against Ferrer's mother's stomach before his birth, and she was instantly cured. Later in his life, he was asked how many people he had cured with God's help, and he answered about 3,000. Well, we'll never know. We'll have to take his word for that. But the church officially recorded 873 miracles that were used during his canonization as a saint. Even as a child, he was recognized as someone special, due to his intellect and spirituality, which led him to become a Dominican friar. Happenings that could only be described as miracles seemed to follow him wherever he went. As a student in Barcelona in 1374, there was a famine, and people faced starvation as a real possibility, and Vincent told the people that they needed to beg God's mercy. And as a result, 20,000 people gathered in the town square, where he told them to repent of their sins, and if they did, ships would arrive with food that very day. The townspeople, with death as a possibility, definitely turned to God. But he had his share of detractors who scoffed at God's help. His superiors were displeased with his prophecies of help, particularly since the weather was so terrible that ships were unlikely to risk being sunk. But Vincent stuck to his guns, and two ships arrived that very night, just as he predicted they would. Even though his predictions would come true, his superiors gave him strict orders. Do not perform any miracles without our permission. And ever true to his vows, he agreed, as long as that order was in effect, no matter what, he would not perform a miracle. And even with so holy a man, God must have a sense of humor. Vincent was walking down the street and passed a tall building that was being constructed. And as he passed the building, there was a stonemason working on the top of the building who, for some reason, slipped and started to fall. Seeing Vincent, he cried out in fear, "Save me!" Looking up, Vincent saw the man starting to fall to his death and called back, "Stay where you are until I come back." And the man must have been frozen in time and space as Vincent ran back to the monastery to get his superior's permission. Well, you could only imagine the reaction of the superior when Vincent described what was happening. The superior called out in amazement, "What's he doing now, and where is he?" And Vincent responded, "He's waiting." The superior sent him rushing back with his permission, and Vincent said to the suspended and frightened mason, "My superior says you can come down now." And the man floated safely to the ground. Too bad they didn't have a TV crew at that time. Vincent was never impressed by what he did because he knew that his gift came from God and any thanks should go to God himself. As a result of the miracles performed by God through Vincent, souls were saved and people believed. His mission was not to perform miracles, but to preach repentance, the folly of sin, and the necessity of penance. God added the power of the miracles to get the attention of the people. What do we need to do today to get the attention of the world? Well, that's a question to answer for each and every one of us. Isn't it a paradox when we stop to consider how much money and time is spent by children and adults going to the movies, watching TV, and reading fantasy stories with plots centering on unbelievable fiction and adventure? I think we all sometimes become a little jaded in looking for the fascinating adventures created in an author's imagination when there are multitudes of stories proven beyond the shadow of a doubt to be true and authentic that shows the awesome power of God's, not just in the Old and New Testaments, but in recorded fact from the early age of Christianity down through the centuries to where we are today. And somewhere right now, today, God is working his wonders and proving his love again. If we and our children only take the time to look, we may be surprised at what we learn and what we see. This is Tom Shrewsbury with Reflections for the Covenant Network.